I'd now like to ask you please to give a very warm welcome. It's a pleasure to introduce our guest speaker to you tonight from the Seattle region in the States, Jack McSee.
Thank you very much, Hugo, and thank you. It is a joy and a privilege to be here tonight. I am grateful particularly to the two men who can't be here tonight, Mike D. and Tim J., who were instrumental in putting this whole thing together and in getting me here. When I first got sober in Boston, being one of the youngest people in AA, I was constantly being invited to speak at meetings. Most of the meetings there were speaker meetings. And one of the things I wanted to talk about was all of the alcoholics who had lived and died before there was an AA program to come to, and the absolute hopelessness of their condition. But I could never trust myself to talk about it because I was afraid I would break down and start crying if I tried to. When I got serious about writing poetry, I thought maybe this is a place where I could talk about this. And the poem that I wrote is called Drunks. Some of you heard Hugo read it last year. I am told that he read it awfully well, but I'm going to recite it. We died of pneumonia in furnished rooms, where they found us 3 days later when somebody complained about the smell. We died against bridge abutments, and nobody knew if it was suicide, and we probably didn't know either, except in the sense that it was always suicide. We died in hospitals, our stomachs huge, distended, and there was nothing they could do. We died in cells, never knowing whether we were guilty or not. We went to priests. They gave us pledges. They told us to pray. They told us to go and sin no more, but go. We tried, and we died. We died of overdoses. We died in bed, but usually not the big bed. We died in straitjackets in the deep cheese, seeing God knows what creeping, skittering, slithering, shuffling things. And you know what the worst thing was? The worst thing was that nobody ever believed how hard we tried. We went to doctors and they gave us stuff to take that would make us sick when we drank, on the principle of so crazy it just might work, I guess. Or maybe they sent us places like Dropkick Murphy's, and when we came out we were hooked on formaldehyde. Or maybe we lied to the doctors and they told us, don't drink so much, just drink like me. And we tried, and we died. We drowned in our own vomit, or choked on it, our broken jaws wired shut. We died playing Russian roulette, and everybody thought we'd lost. We died under the hoofs of horses, under the wheels of vehicles, under the knives and boots of our brother drunks. We died in shame. And you know what was even worse? Was that we couldn't believe it ourselves that we had tried. And we died believing that we didn't know what it meant to try. When we were desperate or hopeful or deluded or embattled enough to go for help, we went to people with letters after their names and prayed that they might have read the right books that had the right words in them, never suspecting the terrifying truth that the right words, as simple as they were, had not been written yet. We died falling off girders on high buildings because of course iron workers drink. Of course they do. We died with a shotgun in our mouth or jumping off a bridge and everybody knew it was suicide. We died under the Southeast Expressway with our hands tied behind us and a bullet in the back of our head because this time the people that we disappointed were the wrong people. We died in convulsions or of insult to the brain. Incontinent and in disgrace, abandoned. If we were women, we died degraded because women have so much more to live up to. We tried and we died and nobody cried. And the very worst thing was that for every one of us who died, there are another 100 of us or another 1,000 who wished that we would die, who went to sleep praying we would not have to wake up because what we were enduring was intolerable, and we knew in our hearts it wasn't ever going to change. One day in a hospital room in New York City, one of us had what the books call a transforming spiritual experience, and he said to himself, "I've got it." "No, you haven't. You've only got part of it. And I have to share it. Now, you've almost got it." And he tried to give it away, but the transmission line wasn't open yet. We couldn't hear it. We tried, and we died. We died of one last cigarette, the comfort of its glowing in the dark. We passed out in the bed caught fire. They said we suffocated before our body burned. They said we never felt a thing. That was the best way, maybe, that we died. Except sometimes we took our family with us. And the man in New York was so sure he had it. He tried to love us into sobriety, but that didn't work either. Love confuses drunks. Still he tried, and still we died. One after another, we got his hopes up, and we broke his heart, because that's what we do. And the very worst thing of all was that every time we thought we knew what the worst thing was, something would happen that was worse. Until the day came in a hotel lobby, and it wasn't in Rome or Jerusalem or Mecca or even Dublin or South Boston. It was in Akron, Ohio, for Christ's sake. The day came when the man said, "I have to find another drunk because I need him as much as he needs me." Now, you've got it. And the transmission line, after all those years, was open. The transmission line was open. And now we don't go to priests and doctors and people with letters after their names. We come to people who have been there. We come to each other. And we try. And we don't have to die. Thank you very much. That poem means an awful lot to me, obviously. I wanted to say a few words, several things about it, actually. I told you how I wanted to write it about all the drunks who had died before AA. But almost everybody in that poem is somebody I knew who came to AA and didn't make it. The guy at the beginning died of pneumonia in a furnished room. It was a guy named Dennis McCarthy who bought me breakfast on Sunday morning, the first Sunday that I was sober. And a week later I heard that he was dead. The guy with his hands tied behind him and a bullet in the back of his head was a boxer named Tony Varanus. And his brother never would have gotten out of if he hadn't copied my paper. And on and on, almost everybody in the poem. From the time I wrote the poem, every time I was going to speak at an AA meeting, I would read it. And I learned very quickly that if I was going to do that, I better bring 8 or 10 copies because people would want copies of it. And I handed them out. When I got on the internet for the first time about the year 2000, the poem was there ahead of me. And it was on recovery websites all over the place. And that was where, someone found it. And that's why I'm here. And the last thing I want to say is I don't feel as though I can take any credit for that poem. I think it doesn't seem to me that I wrote that poem. It feels more like I channeled it.